Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:37 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 6th. I thought I'd kick off with European swap spreads. They're up to 110 basis points. And I think it's perhaps more important to look at where they've peaked historically, back in 2008 and then also in 2012. So you had the global financial crisis, then you had the sovereign wealth crisis in Europe, and the liquidity situation today is similar to those two rather difficult events. So the ECB is talking about raising rates and potentially doing so in an aggressive manner. And the swap spread is suggesting that that's not really realistic, that they're not going to be able to take with one hand and give with the other. And there are inflationary pressures, but perhaps more urgent are the deflationary pressures, because Russia has quite clearly now confirmed what I think everybody pretty much understood, and it's that they're going to curtail gas supply until there's clear evidence that the sanctions have been removed. So this is obviously going to be, I think, problematic. It means that there are going to be several industrial companies are going to run into significant challenges. And we're already starting to see these kinds of pressures, particularly in the agriculture sector. So when we look at the shares of Nutrien or Mosaic, for example, they've been quite volatile. They re rallied really impressively all the way through 2021 and into 2022, pulled back and held the sequence of higher reaction lows, but then rebounded again and have been pulling back over the last day or two. But the upward trend is quite clear, and we're well above the levels that prevailed all the way from 2018 through to 2021. So this is obviously then potentially problematic for Europe, that they don't have spare natural gas for their fertilizer sector. And arguably they're not going to be planting in the winter anyway, so why commit natural gas to the fertilizer sector? But of course, usually you need to be producing ahead of the growing season. So it's going to be problematic. And obviously there's companies that have very dependent operations in Germany, like K&S. So the share collapsed from the peak in early this year, then is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. But the big question is, where are they going to get the resources to be able to continue their businesses? This is going to be problematic for a large proportion of the German economy. So the DAX index, which has perhaps more internationally oriented companies, has been hovering here in the region of the lows from early this year and then in July. And then the MDAX, which is the mid caps and might be more attuned to the Mittelstand, which is Germany's concentration of smaller companies that provide pieces and widgets that are integral to the larger caps business models. Well, that's right on the region of the lows from July, and that low was way below where the low had been in January. So we've got a clear pattern of underperformance here. And this is still a very consistent downtrend with a series of ranges, one below the last. Now let's think about the euro. So we did have an initial rally in here today, but it was quickly reversed and still trading at around 99 cents. This is still a consistent downtrend. The pound had also rallied earlier in the day and then reversed the advance, so it's now closing out the day pretty much unchanged, but still a clear downtrend overall. UK gilts had looked overbought, well, excuse me, the The yield was overextended, the price oversold on Friday, and then had popped up through 3% in here today. So Liz Truss is making lots of promises. The first is that they're going to cap energy prices. That was obvious. It's the least bad potential solution. The last thing the UK needs is mass unemployment. So they're going to ensure that the electricity bills for small to medium-sized enterprises are going to be capped. They might receive the same kind of cap as consumers. So that's a positive for the economy, and it will bring down inflation. Or at least it'll bring down headline inflation. But the surge in bond yields tells us that this isn't going to come for free. And the decline in the pound tells us the same thing. So then the big question is, are these price caps going to create inflation? Well, one of the challenges with price caps, and the reason that they caused inflation in the 70s, was because the corporate sector was so inconvenienced by the price caps that they were disincentivized to increase supply. The longer the price cap is sustained, the less available supply comes on market, and therefore, when the price caps are removed, you get a big inflationary surge. So, what I found especially dragged my attention today was the coincidence between the size of the stimulus and the size of what are being referred to as excess profits in the energy sector. Now, Truss has basically said that she's not going to, she's not keen to introduce windfall taxes. And companies like Shell have paused in the region of their peaks from back in May. And oil prices are weak. So there's obviously this push and pull in the oil market. But oil was down $3 today, completely countermanding the rebound that we had on Friday. It's right in the region of the lower side of the range. And it's not just about the UK. There's slowing demand in Europe, slowing demand in the UK, and tighter financial conditions just about everywhere. So that is sapping demand for oil. But then there is also illiquidity in the oil markets. So open interest appears to be declining. And that's not necessarily because there's less demand for oil in a large percentage terms, but more because it's getting increasingly more difficult to hedge positions because of the volatility. And therefore, because of the volatility, you need to set aside more for margin. Now, when margin rates rise, it is generally deleterious to prices because it's simply too expensive to sustain long positions or hedged short positions. And the quantity of money that needs to be set aside means that people scramble for available cash. They can't come up with it. They have to reduce their size, and therefore the prices start to come back down. And it does look like that's what's happening in the oil market. So one thing that has been very clear is the dollar has been exceptionally strong and it continues to march higher. And that is most particularly true against the yen. And the yen was down another 2 yen in here today, and this is a very clear breakout by the dollar through the 140 level. And this is beneficial for Japanese exports. I know, for example, Mrs. Tracy just bought her Akoya pearl inventory for the Christmas season from Japan, and prices might have gone up, but they were almost completely absorbed by the weakness of the currency. And I think that that's something that lots of other importers from Japan will also be noticing. So I think these are significant factors. And then we can think about the wider issue here, that China's also devaluing its currency. So the yen is trending down, and the renminbi is following it. So we're coming quite close to 7, and 7 has been an area of support since 2017, so a 5-year range. But China has got a lot of challenges, and successive waves of lockdowns that continue to intensify because the most recent variants are much more transmissible, although arguably less deadly. And then also the very clear intention to keep the economy under wraps until after the Party Congress, and that's not going to be until the middle of October. So there's And then on top of all of that, there's the pressure that's coming to bear on the housing market. So China really does need to pull out all the stops and provide liquidity, and they don't seem to have a lot of interest in that. They seem to be focusing much more intently on the surveillance economy and conditioning people to live in a way that is harmonious with the outlook for the Communist Party. And that comes back down to this big point that houses are for living in and not for speculation. So I think those are potentially difficult types of questions that are going to be addressed. But I think perhaps the most important for Europe is not so much that China is slowing down, because Europe's economy is slowing down as well. And we're going to see some downsizing because of this war in Ukraine. We've also noticed in here today that Russia is going to accept yuan for energy payments to China. So that's obviously a significant event. But the more important point is liquidity is tightening everywhere. And eventually something's going to break. This surge in European swap spreads is a canary in the coal mine, and we're going to see companies coming under significant duress. And just looking at the European benchmark, which is analogous to Bund yields, but the yield is pushing back up again. We're up to 1.6% now. In normal circumstances, that would drag higher interest rates. But if interest rates were in fact to rise, it's going to cause problems. And European markets are under some significant duress. So, by comparison, Wall Street has been reasonably less volatile, but it is still coming down. Liquidity conditions are tightening in the US as well. Now, the services industry expanded at the last report, so there's still a healthy economy. There's still a lot of activity. There's still a dearth of workers and high employment. So the US is not yet on the cusp of a recession, but the stock market is trending downwards, and this is still a consistent downtrend. So we should be willing to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And the Nasdaq is where the epicenter of risk is. This is where some of the most highly valued companies reside. And it has been underperforming this year, down 34% from peak to trough. So, coming back now into the region of the 1,000-day moving average, I continue to think of Bitcoin as the barometer for risk appetite. And Bitcoin, having been in an exceptionally tight range for the last 10 days, broke downwards in here today. So, and I think it's important too that when a price series moves $1,000 in a day and the price is close to 70,000, it doesn't matter as much. But when the price is 20,000 and it drops by 1,000, well, that's turning into a rather large percentage. And The most important thing is that this is still a consistent trend on the downside. We have a series of ranges, one below the last, and this has been true since November of a year ago. Even if one is a bull of Bitcoin, seasonally, this isn't the best time. That the times when Bitcoin becomes interesting is following the big declines. This is one of those big declines, and at just about 6 months ahead of the halvening. But a halvening isn't due until 2024. So we're right on time for a crypto winter, and that suggests that prices could fall considerably from where they are right now. But the challenge, of course, is that some of the big consistency characteristics are now going to be pressured. The most important of those is that Bitcoin has never previously pulled back below an initial peak, and it did that in June before rebounding, and now we're coming back down again. And the other big one is that no one who's ever bought and held for 4 years has lost money. And I do think that during this crypto winter, that condition will be challenged. And if that's the case, then if what we could probably expect in future is that even in the next halving, that we'll see a sense of diminishing returns. And it may not get up through the all-time peak again. But we can anticipate that this will remain a very volatile market, which is exceptionally sensitive to the liquidity conditions around the world. The fact that Bitcoin is breaking down is negative for asset prices everywhere. And it often is the first to break lower, and the stock market will often follow it on the downside. And gold prices, having rebounded from 1700, reversed an earlier advance to come back down and test this area. So, with a strong dollar and tightening liquidity, then this is putting downward pressure on all kinds of risk assets. Copper had been also in positive territory in here today. It's very arguable whether that's going to be sustainable. And if we're moving into more of a difficult economic environment, it's going to hit demand for copper, most particularly in China. So we're still in a rather difficult environment. And asset prices are likely to be exceptionally volatile until we see clear evidence of inflation turning and then lower interest rates subsequently. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.